Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, it's a Wednesday. That means we take a look at the world of wildlife on the program, and Scott Craven will be along to do that. And we'll be talking with Adam D'Angelo, who is hiking the Appalachian Trail. So I'm looking forward to talking to him as well. And looking forward as well to talking with you about our spring member drive. It's our largest source of funding for the shows, and it comes from listeners just like you. It's your chance to support the programs you listen to throughout the year. So I hope you'll take that important step when you donate at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And to help me in this task, Jennifer Dargan, Deputy Director of the Educational Communications Board, our guest. Hi, Jennifer. How are we doing?
Good morning, Larry. Well, we're doing okay. I think we need to pick it up a little bit this hour. And I know that listeners are going to want to donate if they haven't already, because it's the last day of the drive. But last hour, we heard from 5 new and returning members. We want to say thank you so much for those gifts. But right now, we have a little something extra to encourage the folks who listen during this time of the morning. We have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $3,000. And this generous match is from current members, including a member in Plum City, which I've heard of a lot of cities in Wisconsin. That one I had to look up, and it's Pierce County over by the Mississippi. You probably knew that. You know where all the cities are.
I've been to Plum City.
Yeah. So I did not know that, but we want to say thank you to that member because it means that they're going to match every dollar that you give.
Yeah, their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio, so you can double your support for the programs you love. Just give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And what a great club it is to be part of. When you donate to WPR, you're joining more than 50,000 other folks who have decided that their listening to WPR is worth funding. So pooled together, your support makes up the largest source of funding for WPR programs.
Very powerful source. You make all possible WPR programs and the ones you enjoy, and that so many others do as well, by making your gift right now. You choose the amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And if you've never given before and you really are looking forward to listening every day, that's really a sign that it's time to donate. When you spend that much time with us, with WPR, it means that it's important to you.
And you're important to us because WPR is listener supported. And we count on financial support from people just like you, people who care about independent news, conversation, and music. And your gift might be $100, $10 a month, or whatever amount feels right to you. Really makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We've probably all had this happen. We spend money on something and then hardly ever use it.
I would say closets and closets full of clothes that I never wore.
I bought a pair of backcountry skis a few years ago that I have never used.
I bought an extremely cheap violin case that was so cheap that I threw it away within 10 minutes of opening it.
Unlike some investments, your donation to Wisconsin Public Radio is a good one. One you'll get value from every day. Make your gift to support the programs you count on right now. Here's how.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your donation. This spring member drive, Larry Mueller here with Jennifer Dargan. And the programs you enjoy are possible thanks to your support. And your contribution could be $10 a month, could be $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose, it makes a difference for our entire community.
And when can you make a difference for your entire community in something that just takes a few minutes? It's so fast. You can make that donation. You just give us your name, contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay.
And your gift supports the stories and programs that keep you connected to the world. So give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I had a feeling this hour was going to be an exciting one, and we are doing really well already. We have that dollar-for-dollar match in effect, and several people have already taken advantage of it, and now we're down to $1,700 left in the match. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your support of WPR is going to go twice as far.
You know what I did yesterday, Jennifer? What?
Oh, you got the Tumblr.
I went.
I heard you talking about it.
I went to the office and said, okay, I want to get that old-fashioned glass.
Yeah.
Is what I call
That's what I call it, too. We both use our old-fashioned glasses.
Anyway, I put in some extra money and to make sure that I would get the tumbler, as they call it. Mm-hmm. I call it old-fashioned glass. Mm-hmm. And you can get one, too. Ask for yours when you give $12 a month at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I'll tell you, Larry and I will be toasting you with our tumblers. Maybe you can toast us back. Hey, if you're a sustainer, we want to say thank you so much. And if you're not, maybe consider becoming one right now. It's very easy to set up, and you'll make ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or from your credit card. You do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and you're going to provide reliable support for the programs that you love.
John Matamidi in Minnesota says, I'm giving an appreciation for Michael Perry and Larry Mueller. Well, that's thank you very much for that. He's also a big fan of Chapter a Day. Your gift right now, very important at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And thank you. As we turn our attention to Adam D'Angelo. Adam, hello.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great. For those who are just tuning in, Adam is hiking the Appalachian Trail. He earned his master's from UW-Madison, was a guest on the show, and mentioned he was doing it. So we thought, oh, we got to get some reports from him. How's it going?
Oh, it's been a great trip so far, Larry.
Okay. Why? How has it been great?
Sure. I'm about 750 miles in now, so on day 45 of hiking. It's been great weather. It's spring down here, so I know you guys have a little bit more cold up there still, but it's days in the 80s for the most part down here, and the leaves are all on the trees.
Here it is, 45 days over 700 miles. How's your body feeling?
Body's feeling great. You know, the key is to start off slow and work your way into it, and now I was doing 12 miles a day when I started, and now it's really not a big deal to do 25.
That's good. You know, Martha in Menominee has a comment. Let's go to Martha for a minute here. Hi, Martha.
Hey, Larry. This is great. Say, last time I hiked the trail, it was the coldest night of my life. And I've lived, you know, in Wisconsin for most of my adult life, but I was a teenager, and I've never been so cold. Hiked Old Rag Mountain in Virginia. I imagine Adam's pretty close to there right now. If it stays in the 80s, the dogwoods have already bloomed. But I wanted to let you know, Larry, that I grew up in that area, and the Appalachian Trail is pronounced just like that, Appalachian, not Appalachian, and the way that the locals will remind you of that is that if you ever pronounce it wrong, we're going to throw an apple at you.
Martha, thanks. All right. Well, you know, I wondered about that and tried both Appalachian, and I hear Appalachian around here so much that's what I went with. Adam, what are the people like there? I mean, you must encounter a lot of people on the walk.
Well, on that comment, Larry, actually, on the pronunciation, it's a bit contentious. People from the Northeast, which is where I'm originally from, they say Appalachian, and then people from Appalachia pronounce it Appalachian. And, you know, the etymology, she is totally right. You know, the etymology of that comes from a Spanish word, so Appalachian is the correct pronunciation. But there's definitely a regional difference, and, you know, 45% of the trail is in the Northeast, so it's hard to say what the right pronunciation is.
Okay.
But the people have been great, and I think they're one of the best parts about the trail. There's like-minded, kind people, and that's the hikers, and the towns you're passing through and the people who've been impacted by the trail are just as nice, if not nicer. It kind of reminds you about the good and the humanity.
Yeah. What's been the most challenging part of it for you, or maybe the most challenging moment for you?
Sure. We've had a bit of bad weather. I think it's always a bit harder to get started on a rainy morning than a nice sunny morning. But I think it's type 2 fun. It's fun after the fact.
Is there any, I was going to say, is there anything you miss about home? But what do you miss most about from home?
Well, I'd have to say I miss my girlfriend. I actually just went and visited her as a celebration of getting one third of the way through. I came back to Madison this past weekend, so I spent some time there, and it was great getting some warm food and a bed that's not on the ground.
So that might be also your most rewarding moment. No, what about your most rewarding moment of the trail itself?
There, I had a great few days in the Grayson Highlands. That's an area where it's grassy mountaintops, and there's wild ponies, or they're released ponies there that live on the mountains, and they come right up to you. And that was just beautiful sunset right up there.
Oh, man. And, you know, I think you said before you left that you were hoping to learn some lessons, maybe about yourself or maybe about others. What's the biggest lesson you've learned?
The biggest lesson, I think, is solitude is a great tool, but people really help you embrace the great parts of life.
Yeah, I can understand that. Is there any one person in particular that you've met on the hike that kind of stands out for you?
I've been hiking a lot with a guy who's, everyone gets trail names. His trail name is Solo Grandpa. He's a cancer survivor. He broke his back 18 months ago, and he's raising money for 9/11 survivors. And he's been a really inspirational guy. He's also in his 70s and retired and is still putting in 22-mile days.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know, one of the producers here has a friend who's hiking the Pacific Crest Trail, and this week she had to take a different route because the path was blocked by snow. Has nature changed your plans very often?
Aside from a couple weeks of cold and some rain, not too much. I'm definitely seeing lots of wildlife now, bears, and I saw a copperhead a few days ago. So it just reminds you to keep an eye on the trail and look where you're walking.
Yeah. And, you know, here you are. What are you, a third of the way through?
Yeah.
About a third. Well, as you continue hiking, what are you looking forward to?
I've got a lot of friends in the Virginia section, which has been great. I saw some friends from undergrad, and I'm going to see some friends from old camp counselor jobs. So I'm looking forward to that, passing through to see my family in the Northeast, getting up into some different scenery, and it's been nice walking into spring, too.
Adam, it's nice talking to you. We'll have a chance to talk again. Thanks so much for taking a few minutes out of your time to talk with us.
Thank you, Larry. Looking forward to it.
All right. Adam D'Angelo, graduated from UW-Madison with a master's degree and is hiking the Appalachian or Appalachian, however you want to pronounce it, trail. And we'll have him back and we'll do it again. Scott Craven coming up now to talk with us. But before we get to that, Jennifer Dargan has snuck back into the studio to talk with you and with me about the Ideas Network during our spring member drive. You rely on the network for informative, interesting talks, and we rely on you to keep the programs like this one going strong.
We do, because listener support is the largest source of funding for WPR programs. And really, that's why your gift of any amount right now makes an important difference. It does. Do it at WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552.
And we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from current members, including a member from Plum City. And, you know, when we have this, your gift turns of $50, let's say. It turns into $100. If you're contributing $100, of course, that's $200. So, and so on. So take advantage of this match and double your support for the WPR programs. When you give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We love hearing from everyone in Wisconsin who is listening, but we also hear from people from all over the country, even all over the world. We hear from Texas, Alaska, Japan, Germany, maybe even someone from the Appalachian Trail.
New Zealand?
Yeah.
I had a New Zealand caller.
And they all, you know, they all appreciate what we're doing here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Your support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 makes WPR what it is, a resource that you enjoy and one that people treasure around the state and the country and the world, for that matter.
The easiest way to make sure that you can keep supporting Wisconsin Public Radio, make sure that your support is always current, is to become a sustainer. And I think about half of our members right now are sustainers. So it's really a popular option. And there's a reason for that. It means your monthly gift, maybe it's $10 a month, $5 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount works for your budget. It just kind of continues on month after month, year after year, the way that you listen. So get started right now. It's going to feel great. Do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This member drive, add to your drinkware collection when you ask for the WPR glass tumbler with your gift of $12 a month.
I have this daily elixir of sea salt and lemon juice and water that I drink, and it would look and taste great out of the WPR tumbler.
I feel bougie when I pour my friends a drink in this fancy WPR glass. Now I could get rid of all the plastic.
This tumbler shows my love of radio. It's got white sound waves going all around the glass.
There's this beautiful, artfully done, cool sound wave design. What does the sound wave design say? Whatever you want it to. It's up to you. Use your imagination. One day maybe it says, I support WPR, although it doesn't really talk, but you see what I'm saying. Use your imagination.
This is such a wonderful glass. I can't wait to sip a cocktail on the deck with warmer weather in this really awesome glass.
Whether it's your morning iced coffee or a relaxing nightcap, the elegant WPR tumbler is sure to become your go-to way to enjoy a beverage. Ask for yours when you give $12 a month or more. Here's how.
I think those sound waves are saying, support Wisconsin Public Radio. That's what I think, Jennifer Dargan. And how do you do that? You go to WPR.org or you phone 888-202-2552. Listener, support's our biggest source of funding, and that's why your gift of $10 a month or $100 a month or $200 a month, whatever amount you choose, has an important impact.
Hey, Larry, we have that dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now, but I think by the time you say hello to Scott Craven, it might not be anymore. So if you're wanting to get in on that, you need to do so right now. We want to say thank you to this member in Plum City who said that they would double every dollar that you give up to $3,000, and they really want to inspire you to support Wisconsin Public Radio. So double the impact of your gift when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, you might spend $20 going out for drinks or dinner, maybe even every single weekend. And in the greater scheme of things, $20 isn't a big expense, especially if it's just once a month.
Right. And that's why we ask you to give $20 a month for your WPR listening on its own. $20 might not feel like much, but when you give it monthly and when lots of people give it monthly, it really adds up for the programs that keep you entertained, inspired every day. So make your gift now, maybe $20 a month, maybe it's another amount. You choose the amount that's right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're a sustaining member making ongoing monthly gifts, I want to do thank you for that. And maybe today's the day you increase your support of WPR. Maybe add $5 or $10 a month or whatever amount you choose at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Joel in Sherwood made a donation and said, Public radio is my constant companion as I deliver mail through the farmlands of Wisconsin. And Joel's not alone, and not alone as a mail carrier who listens to WPR, or not alone as a listener of WPR.
Your gift right now is so important at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and thank you. Not not sound like Scott Craven. That sounds like a bullfrog to me, or a frog to me. But Scott Craven's here, I'm sure of it. He comes by pretty often, at least every other month, and now it's been 2 months in a row. Emeritus UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist, and one of the things we wanted to talk about was frogs, and so Trina LaSousa, our engineer, pulled up a little frog serenade for you, Scott.
Well, thank you, Larry. I enjoy hearing frogs. I was hoping we'd do something like that as a segue into talking a little bit about water gardening and backyard ponds and water features and so forth, which are something people are just getting into now as spring finally seems to have arrived. And as you know, I put in a new water feature year before last, and last year the big attraction in the pond portion was a bullfrog that showed up out of nowhere. I to this day don't know how it got there, because, well, you know, we're on a hilltop south of Madison in the town of Oregon, and there's no standing water really close by. Anyway, the frog showed up, became quite an attraction with the grandkids, and I figured out that it would, well, whether it learned or was just responding to the moving worm, you could drape a night crawler over a twig or plant stem and dangle it in front of him, and he'd leap a foot or two off of his perch and grab that worm and plop back into the pond, and that was a real crowd pleaser. So I was pretty pleased about a week and a half ago when it finally started to warm up a little bit. I went down to the pond, and there was the bullfrog, who we've named Frank. Frank sitting there in his usual perch, and I got him a night crawler, and he hadn't forgotten a thing. So pretty cool. But those are the kinds of experiences on the wildlife side of it, providing water in your landscape design or in your backyard. If you know, everybody can't live on a lakeshore or a riverbank or whatnot. So if you provide water, it's an important habitat feature. And you'll get frogs and occasional waterfowl. We also have a pair of mallards now that are every morning like clockwork in the little pond swimming around, and my wife's taken a real liking to them. And so that's just another interesting thing that you wouldn't have an opportunity to enjoy in terms of wildlife interaction unless you provide that water.
Yeah, and it's just something nice to have on your landscape if you can do it. In terms of frogs, what are the common frogs we have here in the state?
Well, we've got about a dozen if you count the toad as a frog, but since it sings and it's an amphibian along with the others, we'll throw them into the mix. So we're talking about roughly a dozen animals. The more common ones, for example, here around Madison, the first ones you hear are the wood frogs, chorus frogs, and spring peepers. These are all small frogs, but they have a tremendous vocal capacity, and I think most people are familiar with the high-pitched peeping of the spring peepers, the kind of the low croaking sound of the wood frogs, and the kind of the coarse, raspy call of the chorus frogs. And they'll appear in any little tiny body of water, and the males start singing to attract mates, and that goes on for a few weeks until they're replaced in the chorus by leopard frogs and green frogs, and ultimately the bullfrog you heard comes online as a singer later on in the summer when it's a bit warmer. So there's a progression of these frog calls. They're not difficult to learn and become familiar with, and once you feel comfortable with them, then you have the opportunity to not only enjoy the calls a little more in their own right, but also potentially contribute to some of the frog or amphibian surveys that have been going on for many years in Wisconsin to help monitor and get a handle on how the populations of these amphibians are doing. And the toad, I should have mentioned the toads. Their call is very familiar to most people. It's a high-pitched trill, kind of something like that if you vibrate your tongue. And I think everybody's familiar with those. Those also start singing pretty early, and again, just about anywhere where there's a little bit of water. So it adds another element to all the things people can see and enjoy in the spring when it comes to wildlife, and it's also something you can contribute to by providing that habitat that they need.
The habitat, and then citizen scientist opportunities relating to frogs? You mentioned kind of?
Wisconsin Frog and Toad Survey, which was started, it's got to be the better part of 40 years ago, by Ruth Hine in the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. They started that survey by routinely in a systematic way, covering routes around the state and recording what frogs were being heard and in what numbers. Were they abundant, just a few scattered calls, that kind of thing. And over time, lots of people doing that in lots of places in Wisconsin for lots of evenings in the spring, and all of a sudden we have a pretty good feel for not only the basic biology in terms of the phenology of how these calls come online and how long they last and what they're doing, but it also does provide a good index to their populations and therefore how they're doing. So that is one of many things that folks can get involved with in the state in terms of citizen science. In fact, I just saw a new one come along on the DNR email list just yesterday, I think, where they're looking for people, not in terms of amphibians, but in terms of birds, looking for people to help monitor declining populations of chimney swifts.
Yeah.
Very interesting bird as far as bird watchers are concerned, but not very common anymore because many of the tall old chimney stacks that they used to inhabit are no more, or people are capping their big old non-functional chimneys, and that habitat element has been lost to the swift. So that just another example, as you brought up citizen science, another example of how people can contribute and enjoy themselves in the process.
Scott Craven, our guest, join in with your own comments, questions, experiences at 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. You know, Scott, I was reading a piece this morning on mortality in wildlife, and especially out west with deer and elk. It sounds just terrible out there.
It is, and there's some relevancy to Wisconsin folks that I'll mention in a minute, but the states that have been particularly hard hit, Colorado, particularly northwestern Colorado, parts of Utah, Idaho, and especially Wyoming and parts of Montana. But in Wyoming, a lot of the mortality was related to pronghorn antelope. Same situation in northwestern Colorado. There has been some impact on elk and also on mule deer, but the big hit was taken by the pronghorn antelope herds. And, part of the problem was the heavy, persistent snow and bitter cold. But not only was that a challenge for the animals to survive in its own right, but it also drove them onto road right-of-ways where they could get away from the deep snow. And then they were vulnerable to vehicle collisions. And there were some horrible examples. My son was telling me, he lives in Denver, and heard on the radio the other day that they were talking about antelope losses in northwestern Colorado, and they had documented 4 vehicle collisions that killed more than 10 animals at a time.
Oh.
One of them was a pickup truck collision that apparently killed 19 antelope in one shot, so to speak. And another one was a semi-collision. I can't remember whether that was in Colorado or Wyoming, that took out over 30 animals because these herds were just standing there in the road and, you know. So not only was the bad weather and snow in its own right a problem, but the subsequent vehicle mortality was just a carnage, a terrible thing to hear about. But the relevance, so people in Wisconsin wonder, well, gee, that's difficult to hear and listen to, but what does it mean for us? Well, the reality is that there are a heck of a lot of Wisconsin hunters who travel to those states I mentioned to hunt in the fall. And because of this mortality, the states involved are cutting way back on their permits in some management units that were heavily impacted. So there's going to be less opportunity for not only Wisconsin folks, but anybody else who likes to go to the western states to hunt in the wide open spaces. There'll be less permits available, which means it will take longer to draw one in the lotteries. And then just simply people traveling from Wisconsin by RV or whatever, heading to Yellowstone or points west, just the opportunity of driving through the western states and seeing these animals along the road, that too is going to be impacted by the heavy mortality that they've suffered. And it is a bad situation, but it's not all just in the western states either. Our winter severity indexes in Wisconsin just came out the other day, and we had four counties in the extreme northwestern part of the state which were rated as very severe, a couple more that were severe, and that usually means that, for example, in a severe winter, the estimate is that 10 to 15% of the deer herd will not survive, and when that severity index gets over 100 points, there'll be, on average, a 20% or better loss to the deer herd. So in an area where deer struggle anyway, as you well know, your experience up near winter, it's not a good situation. Now, most of the state, fortunately, the southern two-thirds to three-quarters of the state was rated mild as far as the winter went, although I must not have been paying attention. It seemed like a miserable long winter to me, and it's still hanging on. The ice just went out of our little lake that we have a cabin on up in Price County. The ice just went out day before yesterday. And here the fishing opener is Saturday, so winter's hanging on.
it is indeed in some parts of the state, but it's letting loose its grip. As we talk with Scott Craven, wildlife ecologist emeritus, UW Extension wildlife ecologist here on the Ideas Network. And I hope you'll join in with your own comments for Scott as we move along today. And I hope you'll participate in the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Member Drive as well. Jennifer Dargan back with me. Your support is an essential piece of the funding for all the programs you enjoy on WPR. Listener support, as you know, probably it's our largest source of funding. And this drive is your time to take some action. You make the programs possible when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And great news, Larry, our listeners came through for us like they always do, and that dollar-for-dollar match was met. Thank you so much to that current member from Plum City that was involved in that, and we really would like to keep the momentum going. Hey, it's the last day of the drive. Maybe you've been thinking about it all week. Here's your opportunity to get in, to show your support for this program and everything else you listen to on Wisconsin Public Radio. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
One of the enjoyable days of the week for me is Wednesday when we talk wildlife, and certainly one of the enjoyable guests I have is Scott Craven, who's been on for a long, long time. Today we talked a lot about frogs and setting up a pond to entice perhaps frogs or other wildlife to your yard. We talked about the vast problems out west with the snow and creating havoc with the animals out there. And it's something I hadn't actually read about until just this morning, actually. And so it's something I learned, and I learned more as I talked with Scott, and I bet you did as well. Here we are, listener supported, and that means when you give at WPR.org or you phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution, you make this hour of the Larry Mueller Show and many more hours possible. So choose an amount that works for you. Take a couple of minutes and make your gift.
Maybe if you're thinking about an amount to give, you can think about, like, gosh, do I learn something every day when I listen to the Larry Mueller Show? I mean, me personally, I learn several things every day I listen. I know Larry does too, probably you too. But say you just learn one thing a day and you want to give a dollar a day for that knowledge. Maybe a dollar a day is the right amount for your listening. And it's a great value. It's less than you might pay for your cup of coffee or your soda or maybe your cell phone service.
Dollar a day, that, according to my figuring, that comes out to about $30 a month.
30, yep. That's right.
And you can set that up as a monthly transfer from your bank account or maybe your charge or maybe charge it to your credit card. Make your gift right now in the amount that's right for you at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
My name's Kelly Davis, and I live in Whitewater. I like Wisconsin Public Radio because it has this focus on all things Wisconsin, which is very helpful for learning the culture of the state. And then also, once you're here, it helps you feel connected to the community. I became a sustaining member of WPR because it was easy and I didn't have to think about it. And I knew every month I didn't have to make a conscious choice to do what is right. It just happens. Like, if I am listening to Wisconsin Public Radio this much, I should be giving back to it.
To make a difference in your community and beyond, visit WPR.org.
That's right. Go to WPR.org or phone. You could do that too. 888-202-2552 to make your donation. Larry Mueller here with Jennifer Dargan. Your support makes the programs you rely on possible, and your gift could be 10, 20 bucks a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
And it's really special that Wisconsin gets access to all these guest experts that you hear on the Ideas Network every day. And that's possible because 50,000 individuals and households make a choice to support Wisconsin Public Radio.
And here we are working on the honor system here at Wisconsin Public Radio. So join this team effort with your gift right now. Let's say 10 bucks a month. You decide the amount. And then make your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And you know, we had that dollar-for-dollar match-in effect, but we also had a number of gifts to be received during this hour in effect as well. And I think we got a ways to go yet on
Well,
that.
Let's get an update on that next time we come back. I don't have that figure right here. But I will suggest this. If you, Larry, you suggested $10 a month. That's a great amount to give for your listing. Maybe $12 a month. And if you can do the $12 a month, you can take advantage of that cool new glass tumbler. You got to check it out.
The old-fashioned glass.
You got to check it out. It doesn't have an old-fashioned with fruit on it on the image on our website.
No.
But it's there, and you can see the cool etching on it. There's like a sound wave on it. And, you know, pick that up and show your support for Wisconsin Public Radio and drink out of this cool glass. We'll toast you. You can toast us. Do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Susan in Racine says WPR is unique in presenting informative shows about news, gardening, finances, health, pets, and natural resources. There's no other radio source providing such a good mix in Wisconsin. Your gift right now, very important at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And thank you. Taking a look at the world of wildlife on the program today, Larry Mueller here with Scott Craven, Emeritus UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist, Trina LaSousa, our engineer today, Claire Neipert's our producer. And if you have a question or comment, experience, I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@WPR.org. Lisa in East Troy emailed us, Scott. She has a common gray tree frog that has hitchhiked into her house on a plant last fall. And it's now awake, and she's kind of feeding it and taking care of it as well in an aquarium. But when can she release it back outside?
Well, that's an interesting way to spend the winter, I guess. Tree frogs are cool little frogs. I didn't mention them when we were talking about the litany of frogs in the state, but they're a particularly interesting one. The bottom line is, I would say this afternoon, we're looking at a really nice stretch of weather here with lows in the, after tonight, lows in the 50s at night and highs in the 70s to upper 70s. That frog will be fine at this point outside.
All right. There you go, Lisa. You have Scott's permission to let that tree frog go. Well, you know, I don't know if you've done anything in your garden yet or looked around it. I've done a little bit, but the spring is, you know, we're planting our gardens and getting ready to get out there and do some planting. How do we build our gardens with wildlife in mind? You've got a huge garden and you've got some systems that you've used.
Well, theoretically, I view my entire 12 acres as a garden in a sense, Larry, because I, you know, as you know, back when we bought the land and decided to build the house, it was a cornfield. And over the years, we've worked toward developing it, not only with soil conservation and other things in mind, which is why most of it's in the Conservation Reserve Program, but in the process of putting in those prairie plantings and getting permission to put some woody buffer strips along a couple of the boundaries that have proven to be tremendous travel lanes for wildlife coming from some woods across the road to farms off to the north. Everything we did along the years was designed to, as the plants matured, provide some element of habitat for wildlife. So we used a couple of the DNR tree and shrub packets that are available from the state nursery and have fruit-producing shrubs and small trees like wild plum and dogwoods, as well as some evergreens, and provided all these things, which, you know, back, we bought the land in 1997, and as I said, it was a cornfield. There wasn't, yeah. there wasn't a green leaf on the 12 acres, and now I look out, and I see white pines that are probably 40, 50 feet tall, and some of those fruit-producing shrubs I mentioned have actually been shaded out and have disappeared over the years. But the bottom line is the plan worked. And anybody can develop their yard, no matter how big or small, with a plan like that in mind. As far as specific gardens, whether you're laying out a perennial bed or an annual flower bed or a vegetable garden or tree and shrub plantings, there are references available, like the Wisconsin Extension's publication, Trees and Shrubs that Attract Wildlife, the famous publication for the Minnesota DNR, Landscaping for Wildlife, which has specific garden designs in it that you can follow to the letter if you want, with suggestions for plant materials, all of which, rather than just, you know, hey, that's a pretty plant, I'll put that in, without considering what else, what other benefits it might provide, these plants in the wildlife guides are all selected for providing pollen or nectar or particular shelter for nesting or some other element that birds or mammals or whatever will utilize. So that's one element in planning your gardens. But the two things to get to your point, what do I consider? I was out planting this morning, as a matter of fact, and put most of my annual flowers in with the weather forecast the way it is. And a lot of things that the peas and the spinach and the lettuce and the onions and all are up and doing very well in the vegetable garden. But there's two elements there. One is doing things with your water gardening or with your other gardening with wildlife in mind in terms of providing habitat. But at the same time, you have to consciously protect those plantings from too much of a good thing. And as you well know, an unfenced garden in the country like I am is an invitation to every rabbit, squirrel, mole, and everything else, or woodchuck in the area. Hey, let's eat there tonight. And so you have to take steps in terms of fencing and potentially the use of some repellents or even live trapping and removal of some particularly problematic individuals in order to protect the plantings, which in turn you're trying to put in for benefit of some of the wildlife. Consider putting in an apple tree, a very attractive feature to quite a few species, including deer, but so attractive to deer that unless you cage or protect that apple tree when it's young, they will just chew it down to a stub, and you're not going to get any apples, and neither are they. So sometimes some of those species can be their own worst enemies. But the bottom line is you think about protecting what you're doing for your own values and ultimately for some wildlife values, but you also think in terms of making your selection of plants or garden types or a tree, hey, what's it going to do for both wildlife and us later on? Is it going to be the right type of shade? Is it going to produce nuts or fruits or something like that, or good fall color? All those are decisions that go in to figuring out what you want to do.
Bonnie in Wanakee emailed us a couple of weeks ago. She found an injured hawk sitting on her deck furniture. Animal services picked it up, hopefully to rehab. She's wondering how he was hurt. That same morning, she found a dead squirrel near the deck. And the next 2 days, she had a Cooper's hawk on her deck. Could the Cooper's hawk have attacked the juvenile red-tailed hawk?
Um, Well, anything's possible. I mean, the fact that there was a dead squirrel probably means that either the juvenile red tail may have been the end of the squirrel, and so that was somewhat irrelevant. But I think, not knowing what the injury was, if the bird was clearly, you know, torn up a bit or had been impacted on the back or back of the head where there were feathers missing and presumably a bloody wound, then, yeah, maybe another hawk was involved. But if it was a broken wing or something that looked like an impact injury, then it may have been a window collision that she didn't happen to hear, or something that's more common with birds than perhaps one raptor attacking another one. But I learned a long time ago, both on this program and in handling lots of calls while I was working, that you never say never, or never say that anything's impossible when it comes to wildlife. But without some information on what kind of injury the injured red tail had, I can't really say.
Yeah. Scott Craven, our guest today, great to have him on, as he's a regular on Wisconsin Public Radio on the Larry Mueller Show. It's so much fun to have him come by, especially during our spring member drive, and Jennifer Dargan back with us. Your gift makes a huge difference because listeners are the largest source of funding for our shows. So I hope you'll step up and be counted as a supporter with your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And Larry, we've had 11 gifts so far this hour, and we have a new revised goal to reach 20 by noon. We can do it. It's such a great time to donate. If you've been thinking about it, and I know you have, we're winding down our member drive. It's the last day today and not much longer to donate during the Larry Mueller Show. Support Wisconsin Public Radio with your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That was great to have Scott talk about his own land and garden that he and Candy, his wife, have worked on. And in the process of that, we learned a lot about what we might do with our own gardens. And it certainly enriches a lot of people's life. I hear that a lot from people. How's it unique to public radio? It is unique, and here we are, listener-supported, and that means when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, you make this hour and many more hours possible. So choose an amount that works for you. Take a couple of minutes and make your gift.
Make your gift. Someone else got in on our goal. We are now up to 12 gifts and we're looking for 20 by noon. You can be part of this. You can make this successful, and you can also pick up your highball glass, your old-fashioned glass, your tumbler, and you can make some room in your drinkware cabinet and shove that right in there. Well, be careful with it. It is glass. But you can do it and be proud of Wisconsin Public Radio and show your pride when you drink from this glass with your gift of $12 a month or more today at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I just like the balanced, thoughtful approach that public radio provides us.
I like to hear the interviews. They're always very topical.
Regardless of the event or the program, it's always top quality.
If you ask me to find some other station, I don't think I could find it. I wouldn't want to do without it.
I just really enjoy it.
WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your donations during our drive. Larry Mueller here with Jennifer Dargan, and the programs you enjoy are possible thanks to your support and your contribution. $10 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, it makes a difference for our entire community.
It does, and you make WPR possible with your support. So right now, help us get to that goal that we are trying to reach. It's a stretch goal. We only have a couple of more minutes to reach 20 gifts. We are at 12 right now, but I know there's some folks on the phone and on the website at WPR.org, or they're maybe on the phone, 888-202-2552.
And really, now's the time here to help us reach this goal. And while you're thinking about it, it just takes a couple of minutes to make your contribution, that's for sure.
We are asking you, don't put it on your to-do list for later. We want you to take care of it now. Give at WPR.org or 888 888- 202-2552, and I guarantee you, you'll have a great feeling when you support the programs that you value.
You know, I thought we should have given away two tumblers or two glasses. It would have been nice with a larger contribution. But in the meantime, for $12 a month, we'll send you one of those old-fashioned glasses if you'd like it. It's a cool glass that's going to remind you how much you value WPR every time you use it. Ask for yours at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Larry, do you know how much I agree with you? I donated twice as much and got two. I don't want to drink out of it by myself. I want to have someone over.
You did do that? Oh, I didn't know you could do
of
that.
Of course, of course. If you give $24 a month or more in support of WPR, you can get two of those.
I didn't know that.
Get in on it right now.
Get in on it right now. Well, I can go. I wonder if I can go back and I put a couple of $100 extra in to get one. I should have put in, I'll have to go and talk to them.
You can always go back.
I can always go back and talk to them. Listen, here we have a lot of fun on this show, and it's great to have people like Scott Craven on. We love WPR. I hope you do as well, and I hope you'll support us right now. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution. We'll be back with Scott right after this look at the news. In the meantime, please contribute. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at the world of wildlife with Scott Craven, Emeritus UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist. Always great to have Scott stop by, and you can join in. You can email us to ideas@wpr.org or phone 800-642-1234. And let's take some calls. Claire in Viroqua, I believe, is up next. Let's go there. Hi, Claire.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
First, just to thank Scott Craven for his long career and good work in Wisconsin. And the idea is a wildlife corridors that are natural north-south corridors for wildlife. This is in response to your story of the elk, I think it was in Colorado. But so this is a permaculture concept of zones where humans are and then working out to where you have wildlife through different zones. Do you know what I mean by that?
Scott, are you familiar with that concept?
Sort of. I understand the notion of trying to set aside properties that that wildlife can essentially call home in an unmolested way. And the concept on a larger scale of restoring a big chunk of the Great Plains to what it was for native wildlife, you know, many years ago. But in terms of the backyard and so forth, no, I need a little more explanation from Claire.
Yeah, I think Claire's talking about the larger scheme of things.
Yeah, I think this. It's great to hear what you just said about the Great Plains being brought back to prairie and having huge expansive areas where humans don't go. It's where wildlife get to be. We might have some bridges over that area. And then going through zones of where humans have pastured animals and orchards, and then we have back into, you know, where humans are working with plants and then into the city. So that those are the zones out to these large north-south areas that would go through natural, you know, where rivers go and where, anyway, so yeah. Really having animals come first.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I'm sympathetic to that that line of reasoning, Larry, but I'm also a bit of a pragmatist and realize that a great deal of our landscape is already heavily impacted by the human footprint and people who are already occupying some of these places that others might like to set aside. Some do buy in. For example, in the Great Plains, there are people supporting the restoration of the original conditions. But overall, there's still a sense that, hey, private property is private property, and we need to preserve our opportunities in the future, and so on. And I guess I would point to our recent opportunity here in Wisconsin to set aside the Pelican River, 56,000 acres up near Rhinelander, for a relatively small amount of money, to put that aside in perpetuity as wildlife and recreational landscape. And it was ultimately thwarted by the notion that, oh no, we can't take that much land out of production, so to speak, and forego future development possibilities or future commercial opportunities. It just wasn't going to work. And I don't know, there's a great divide between people on both sides of that argument, but opportunities to protect a big chunk of land like that in perpetuity don't come up every day. And that one seems to have gone by the boards.
And and once it goes by the boards, there's no getting it back.
No, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate part of it. Claire, thank you so much for calling. And by the way, I think there was some grumbling on several sides on that, and some people said the DNR didn't do enough in terms of local input into the process that would have helped, I think, if there had been more education about it.
Right. Well, sadly, it's always easy to look back and point at, well, if you'd done that, if you'd done this, it might have been different. But the reality was it was, in many people's opinion, a great opportunity, and it's gone by the boards. So,
it has gone by the boards. Perhaps it's not completely gone. Stephen Rhinelander, let's go to you for a minute here. Hi, Steve.
Hello. Yes. And Scott, that Pelican River Forest Project is certainly not a done deal. The landowner is going to have to proceed with this. And unfortunately, it's probably going to lock out folks who wanted to drive in there to hunt and maybe snowmobile and ATV. But the conservation project will still go through. And it really is too bad that the politicians on the Joint Finance Committee turned their backs on hunters, fishers, ATVers, snowmobilers for that project. But we're confident it's still going to go through.
Well, good. That's good news. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you very much for calling. And Bob in Kewaunee has something. Let's go there. Hi, Bob.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
Spring has kind of almost sort of come to Kewaunee, but the turkey vultures can. So, we have an area here that's kind of high ground where they have a ski area and a lift and stuff. And in the morning, you'll find large numbers of turkey vultures out there sunning themselves. My question is, would that be because they're nesting in the area? And primarily, do they nest this time of year? Do they nest where they're outdoors?
Well, if you've got an area that has the kind of topography where they can catch thermals to get up in the air and soar around the way they do, that's one thing that they find attractive. There's, again, some high ground that offers some seclusion from human activity is also attractive to them, where they can get up in some dead trees or on rock formations or whatever else and warm up in the morning, sun themselves a bit, and then take off for their daily flying. So there may be a couple of reasons why they're there. And this time of year, they, like many birds, are moving through and may be concentrated now, but not necessarily concentrated later on. But they do certainly nest, not quite yet, I don't think, but they nest, as do virtually all birds, from early to late spring and into early summer. And I believe they nest on the ground, and it's about all I can tell you at this point.
Yeah, there you go, Bob. Thanks for calling. Leslie in Green Bay, we'll go to you. Hi, Leslie.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I heard you last week when you were talking about the mourning doves that were now being hunted, and I realized I have not heard mourning doves here in my backyard for years. ever since they were allowed to be hunted.
Scott, go ahead.
Well, I don't remember talking about mourning doves recently, but I...
It did come up last week when I talked with our wildlife outdoor riders.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, the bottom line is you remember the tremendous upheaval in the forest, Larry, when it was proposed that Wisconsin would open a mourning dove hunting season, and the Conservation Congress hearings in the spring were just packed with people who were, you know, very vehemently opposed to this. They're the state bird of peace, and it was perceived as a pending catastrophe. But in fact, over the years that mourning doves have been hunted now, I don't think there's been any documented population decline that can be attributed to hunting. They're very prolific birds and quite abundant and a very popular game bird in many states in the country. You know, I'm not sure what to say. It's provided another hunting opportunity that's very popular with some folks. It's be coming up in the first, it's one of the early hunting seasons. But again, because they became a game bird all of a sudden, there was more attention paid to them. And the DNR was monitoring their populations. They were banding and monitoring birds. Landowners were putting in sunflower fields for the benefit of the birds and indirectly for the benefit of hunting opportunity. So more attention was being paid to the birds. And I think one could make a reasonable case that the hunt, this is going to seem a bit incongruous, but one could say that the hunting season was actually, in a way, good for mourning doves, and they still continue to flourish. And I've certainly got plenty of them around my backyard. I don't hunt them on the property. Nobody does nearby, but I don't really think that makes any difference. The fears that were expressed years ago that these birds would be shot off of bird feeders or off of telephone wires just never materialized. And it's a very well-organized, relatively short-duration hunt, and I think the populations are doing fine. What's affecting Leslie's mourning doves or her particular area, you know, it's not uncommon to see any species of birds disappear for a while or a period of years, and who knows why? Somebody else has a better feeding operation, the habitat's changed, weather patterns. There are many explanations, but I don't think you can point a finger at the absence of mourning doves in any particular area and attribute that to the fact that they're now game birds.
Leslie, thanks. Let's go to Kel in Sugar Camp. Hi, Kel.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Is there any sort of nesting box that chimney swift would accept, and how high up in the tree would you have to put it?
Yeah.
I was just wondering if you can find, is it online where you would find the dimensions of a nesting box that chimney swift would accept?
You know, I'm not sure that they would accept a nesting box, Larry. I think that this is something, as I indicated, that the DNR is looking for volunteers to monitor them. And I think if you do a little searching on the DNR website, I remember this coming up a number of times over the past 10 or 15 years, where there was concern about declining chimney swifts. And there was some information on creating nesting structures that they may use. I just don't remember what form they took. But I think a little bit of internet work and a little searching on the DNR website would give anybody interested in this whatever they might need.
Yeah, I think there's even been some work to save some of the chimneys, those large chimneys that, you know, they're no longer being used, and rather than take them down, leave them there.
Right.
Yeah.
I would guess that a stop at one of... at one of the bird feeding supply places like Wild Birds, that's part of the sponsorship of this program, would also glean some useful information on that.
Yeah. Cal, thank you so much. Take a look on the DNR website, or maybe go to Wild Birds Unlimited and check it out there, and hopefully you'll get some answers on that. I'm trying to remember. I don't think we've talked about it on the show. Actually, I could mention that tomorrow we're going to take a look at spring migration with Bill Volkert and talking more about birds. And so maybe we can bring that up with him on tomorrow's show. He might have some information on it. In the meantime, Scott, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
Well, have a great day, and thanks to the listeners for their support. It's what keeps us going. Thanks.
Scott Craven, our guest today, he is an emeritus UW Extension wildlife ecologist. And Jennifer Dargan back with me as we talk about our spring radio member drive. Our goal is to keep bringing you topics like Scott Craven and the wildlife topics that we do and natural resource topics. Frankly, every Wednesday we target that. And our goal is to keep those coming, and your support helps make that happen. You're the largest source of our funding. So if you haven't given yet, give now. Any amount makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And we've heard from 5 donors so far this hour. Thank you to everyone who gave. Our goal is to get to 15 gets by the end of chapter a day, by 1 o'clock. And this goal is set up to make sure that we'll be in a good position to pay for all the great wildlife shows that are to come in the months ahead.
And let's meet that goal. It happens one gift at a time. Let's start with yours at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Just think about all of the guest experts that you hear from, the physical therapists. You might hear from a yoga instructor, but not too many of those. You might hear from a wildlife expert. Certainly so many master gardeners. And you don't have those on your speed dial, probably, but that's okay. When you listen to the Ideas Network, you can get all that great advice right here. And what does it cost to you? Well, you choose. It could be free, but we would like to hear your support for the Ideas Network because it is your source for helpful information. So support it now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you can toast to WPR with your new old-fashioned glass, mm-hmm. or tumbler, as some people call it. It's really a cool glass. It you know what an old-fashioned glass looks like. That's what it is. But it has a sound wave design and a kind of a shout-out to WPR. And so you can ask for that when you give $12 a month or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Every time you listen to WPR, you learn something new. And if that's not true for you, I don't know. You're a super Mensa genius, but I learn several new things every weekday when I listen to the Larry Mueller Show. Could be something like today about frogs or birds or the plants that the critters are eating. It could be, you know, about a new novel that's out by a Wisconsin author. There's always something that sparks your interest.
You know, I had a graduate student, this is some years back, but I had a graduate student do a little study of Wisconsin Public Radio listeners, and he called 100 listeners who were contributors here and asked them if they could remember anything they learned on this show in the past week. And virtually everyone was able to recall something that they had learned during the week. He was dumbfounded, and I was kind of dumbfounded myself. I thought, well, there'd be a few that wouldn't, but no, there were everyone did, and because I think people get engaged in the program and mm-hmm. engaged in the listening, and that engagement you feel when you listen, I think that's worth your support. So give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And if you're thinking that maybe you don't have to support WPR because someone else is doing that. I heard they made their goal. Someone else helped out with that. Well, the truth is WPR has been around for so long because thousands of people have made the decision to support something that is important to them.
And now is the time for you to make that decision. And thinking about many first-time donors, I can't remember what I donated the first time around, but a lot of first-time donors give $10 or $20 a month. You choose what works best for you. Give now. It's time at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And whether you go online or you call, it's an easy process. You just give your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay.
Just takes a couple of minutes. I just did it yesterday, as a matter of fact. And I tell you what, those few minutes fund your daily listening. Your support right now really makes a difference at WPR.org. Or at 888-202-2552.
I love how, Larry, you talk yourself into donating as you're talking in other people into the importance of Wisconsin Public Radio. You say, oh, well, that's a good idea. I should do. You know, once in a while, you get more than you pay for. WPR is somewhere where that's true every day. So maybe you could think about a gift of $2 a day to support the radio programs that you love.
Yeah, $2 a day makes a lot of news, talk, and music possible. That's about $60 a month, and you can make that gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Or maybe a gift of $10 or $20 a month. You know, whatever amount works for you is going to contribute to making the intelligent radio that you're here for that's available to the entire state of Wisconsin and beyond. You can see why your gift is really powerful.
Yeah, and as I said, it just takes a couple of minutes. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And, of course, you choose the amount.
We are wrapping up here. We don't have very many more minutes for you to get in your donation for the Larry Mueller Show. Don't be stalled because you're wondering how much should I give. It's really up to you, and any amount makes a difference. Your contribution will be turned into programs that keep you informed and engaged all year long.
So make your gift right now, and you can go to WPR.org to make that gift or phone 888-202-2552. Thank you for making an investment that serves your whole community.
I love...
I'm Kathy Ross, and I live in Whitewater. WPR basically accounts for so much of what I know about Wisconsin. Politics, geography, people, interesting places to go. Subscribing to the daily email is a routine part of my life. I know before I go to bed at night, I'm going to look at that email and see things I really need to try and focus on. And then I've recently gotten to the podcast world, and it is wonderful to be able to, oops, I missed that, and now I can find it out here, and it's great.
Make your contribution today because listener support makes Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Give now at WPR.org and click donate.
It's easy to do, and we just have a couple of minutes before the end of this program, but then you have up until 1 o'clock, let's say, to reach that goal. We're already doing pretty well. I think we have 10 already people who have contributed. I'd love to have the other 5 people contribute by the end of this particular show. Your gift, go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552, ensures a bright future for the programs you rely on.
There's so many listeners that this is just part of their everyday listening to the Larry Mueller Show and then going into Chapter a Day. I love how you join in with the Chapter a Day audience to have this joint goal. So we're looking for, it looks like 9 more gifts now by 1 o'clock. This is our joint goal. But, you know, this is just one more minute or so for the contribution to be credited towards the Larry Mueller Show. So if this is your go-to place every weekday, please make that contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Love our audience. We have a great audience. It's a nice community of listeners that we have here. We're listener supported. If you haven't contributed yet, I hope you'll do it right now. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. I'm Larry Mueller with Jennifer Dargan. Thanks so much for your contributions. If you haven't done it yet, do it right now.